Get to the chopper!
You're bleeding, man.
I ain't got time.
Oh, what a day! What a lovely day!
I'm gonna take you to the bank. To the blood bank.
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. And hear the lamentation of the women.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome to Good for an Action Movie. My name is Will Thornton.
And I'm Max Steele.
We are very excited to be hosting our very first episode of this here podcast. Max, why don't you tell us a little bit about the development of the podcast, how we came up with the idea?
Yeah, so me and Will are very good friends, and we're both really big movie buffs. And we were talking one day kind of about action movies and the concept of a film being good for an action movie, but not necessarily good for a movie. And the distinction kind of between that kind of came up, and we wanted to make kind of a podcast about it.
Yeah, and also, is that even really a thing? Can a movie truly be good for its genre, but, you know, not good as a movie? We don't know. We're going to discover over the course of the next 1,000 episodes.
We are so excited to be on episode 1 of 1,000.
The last movie we'll be discussing is, of course, Errol Flynn's Robin Hood from 1927.
And I cannot wait for I actually wanted to watch Errol Flynn's They Died With Their Boots On, where he plays General Custard, but I was unfortunately vetoed by Will.
Is that an actual movie?
Yeah, They Died With Their Boots On, General Custard.
How does it portray Native Americans?
Probably very poorly, as it was made in the 1930s.
Yep. Okay. Okay, yeah, so we're going to have certain rules to this podcast. The first thing is, what constitutes an action movie? Something that is pretty debatable, but what we have decided on is the movies we will be discussing will need to be categorized as action on IMDb. So if you go on IMDb for any movie, you will see it normally has like 2 or 3 different genres. If one of those is action, we can talk about it. If one of those isn't, sorry, we can't do it. Looking at you, adventure movies. So
many adventure movies are going to ruin us on that. But some other rules. We're going to have 3 sections of the shows. The first section, we're going to discuss the pros of the movie that we're discussing. The second session is the cons of the movie. And then finally, the third section will be the action, the actual action of the movie. And the pros and cons, we can't discuss said action.
Oh, yeah, that's true. At the end of the podcast, we will be rating each film both as a movie itself out of 4 stars and as an action movie out of 10 stars, because everything is cranked up.
Should it be out of 10 stars or just like something very action movie, like 10
helicopters with machine guns, 10 Schwarzeneggers?
Yeah, 10 I Kill You Lass.
Yeah, well, we'll decide that when we get there.
Yep. And at the end of every single episode, we will also give a recommendation. So if we like the movie, we're going to give you an recommendation of something that it reminded us of. And if we did not like the movie, we will give you a recommendation for something to use your time with elsewhere.
That's true. Wow. So, yeah, that's basically all the rules of the podcast. Without further ado, we'd like to jump right into the first movie we will be discussing. I picked this movie because I think it is a pretty controversial movie, but also I think you can just talk about it endlessly because there are so many interesting choices made within the movie. And that is, of course, the one and only Spider-Man 3, directed by Mr. Sam Raimi, starring Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, and the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. J.K. Simmons.
Oscar-winning actor, J.K. Yeah. Simmons.
Oscar-winning actor, the landlord guy.
Yeah, I'm actually working on going back through every single one of J.K. Simmons' movies and adding Academy Award-winning actor J.K. Simmons to every single credit.
Into the credits. Yeah, I picked this movie. I'll start off with a pro. I have a lot to say about the pros of this movie because I think this is... I'll just start off with my first pro. I think this movie is objectively a very funny movie, except when it's not. I think it goes overboard sometimes, but I think that... And that comes from Sam Raimi himself, who I think has directed a lot of very, very good comedic movies. And I think this movie is just... It cracks me up at so many different parts.
That is actually very true. One of the things that I mentioned in my pros is that the movie just goes really fast. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-hour and 19-minute movie, but it was actually kind of enjoyable outside of like a couple moments that are just so cringeworthy, but we'll get to those a little bit later. Yeah. But yeah, the movie is very, very, very funny. Do you want to give us some examples, Will, of times that you cracked out loud?
Well, I mean, this will go into my sort of overarching thing, but this movie... knows it is a comic book movie, and it takes advantage of that. So it has very, very funny jokes in it with the JK, with, you know, J. Jonah Jameson and the Bruce Campbell cameo, but it also just, it doesn't ever take itself too seriously, leading us to what I believe is both of our favorite line of the movie, which is Spider-Man, well, he's Peter Parker at the time, sitting in his apartment when he hears on the police scanner, all units report in, there is a crane out of control, which that is just so funny. yeah, no, I think there are a lot of just really good moments in this movie that just make it enjoyable throughout. But, yeah, some agreement.
Yeah, do you want me to mention one of my kind of pros that you kind of haven't mentioned yet?
Yeah, go for it.
One of my favorite things about this movie that I just forgot, and I don't think I would have appreciated until now, and I don't think I would ever have used the word appreciate with Spider-Man 3. In full disclosure, I didn't really think I liked this movie. I saw it in 2007. And didn't really like it. And then intermittently throughout the years, I saw it on TV every once in a while just to like laugh at it with my dad or whoever I was with. So I was kind of skeptical when we broke this out for our first episode. But I will admit that I did at least like enjoy most of my time, maybe for the wrong reasons, but I did enjoy watching this movie a lot. And then, like I said, the thing that I appreciated kind of, it's really weird, but the movie ends with a song. The movie ends with Kirsten Dunst singing I'm Through With Love, which is a very weird way to end an action movie. I really appreciate that because, honestly, I think I only appreciate that because it reminds me of just a Woody Allen movie, because a lot of his movies just end with a song.
I'll also throw in there the film genius of Sam Raimi knows no bounds, and the movie actually begins with a song as well, which is Kirsten Dunst singing This Thing Called Love Is Wonderful. Some nice framework there for Mr. Raimi.
We are actually structuralist. We are very much into formalism.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of moments in this movie that are just plainly dealt good filmmaking. I know it's not a question. I could not think of what it is. Just good old good filmmaking. The camera work in this movie is very, very good. And that's Sam Raimi. You go back to his earliest stuff with Evil Dead, and the camera work in those movies is just like really, really fascinating. But he uses, music, how he's directing and things like that. And it's you get the feeling that even if parts of the movie aren't very good, it's being made by a very, very competent director.
I definitely agree with that, because I think most of my problems are not with the direction. A lot of the problems of the movie is just like through the storytelling and some of the acting.
Yeah, yeah.
What were some of the other pros? Did you have any other pros, Will?
I'll do some quick hits. I absolutely love Aunt May in this movie. I think her type of character is something that a lot of the current Marvel movies are missing, which is just sort of this side character that you just really love. And she's there to give the lesson, but I think her performance is so good. And that mostly comes from her being developed in the previous two movies. But I really, really enjoy every scene with her in it. She's just so sweet. I love her.
Yeah, she's awesome. I'm blanking on her name right now. But
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons. But I think it's Rosemary Ellis.
I think that is correct.
But Rosemary Ellis, I so apologize to Rosemary if she's listening to this and I just mispronounced her name. But she's a classically trained theater actor, and I think that really kind of shows in the movie, just because I don't know how natural she is with it. She's also British, so she's doing an accent.
Yeah. Oh, I will also say, I should have mentioned this, is I think that hands down the standout scene in this movie is when the Sandman is created. That sequence when he is developed in the sand is, I mean, it could be like a Pixar short film. I think it's done so well. And how he's, I don't know, you go on YouTube, I'm sure you can find it if you haven't seen it in a long time. I love that little sequence. It's only like 2 minutes long, but it just kind of, the movie takes a break. And wow, I love that part.
Yeah, one of my pros that I wrote down and that I actually was very impressed with when I was watching the movie again was just the Sandman in general, and I love Thomas Hayden Church as an actor. I love Sideways. I actually am in love with him mostly because George of the Jungle was one of my favorite movies growing up, and he plays Lyle in George of the Jungle. So I will be forever in love with Thomas Hayden Church for that.
Yep.
But like Will said, a lot of the things they do with the Sandman are just really cool. Just how he's like this reluctant villain. He didn't really get a fair chance kind of in life, even though he is a crook, but you really just feel bad for him. And the thing I want to point out about the scene that Will just talked about, there's the Sandman has this locket, and I think you might remember that he has a picture of his daughter in a locket.
Yeah.
And right after he's transformed into the Sandman, you kind of see like an agonizing look on his face, like he's looking for the locket, and he looks down and he sees it, and he tries to grab it, and it goes through his fingers.
Yep, amazing.
And it's heartbreaking. I never thought that I just would just feel that bad watching Spider-Man 3, and I did not remember that from the first time I watched it.
Also, the picture in the locket looks like it's from about 1815.
Oh, yeah. It's actually ridiculous.
It looks like the early days of photography were used to capture his daughter.
It looked like the daughter had to sit still for like 30 minutes for the photo to be captured. But yeah, it's just it. Like Will said, it's an amazing piece of filmmaking.
It really is. I don't know. Cons? You have any more pros? Should we move on?
I don't have any more pros, but I would like to go into a con just right after saying the Sandman stuff.
Well, he is a con.
He is a con man. The biggest con, I think, is that he's not in the movie that much. Mm-hmm. He's only in it for like, I don't know, I didn't time, but it feels like he's only in there for 20 minutes of the 2 hours and 19 minutes running time.
Yeah, I think some of the most flack that this movie catches is it has no shortage of villains. Realistically, you could say this movie has four villains: the Sandman, Harry Osborn as the Hobgoblin.
Oh my gosh!
They never call him that. Venom, which we can probably be a con of its own, and also sort of like the black suit Spider-Man, which is his inner demon that he's battling throughout like the second half of the movie. But yeah, I feel like Sandman is such a well-developed villain, and it's crazy that he doesn't get lost in the mix, but he doesn't. But it's just, you do wish that he had just been in it more.
I do have a theory on why that is, but I will mention that at the end of this podcast.
Okay. Stay tuned, everyone. Don't close out yet.
My other big con kind of goes along with that is that there is so much going on in this movie.
Yeah.
It is like, it's in a way it's a pro because like it is really easy to watch because there's so much going on and it goes by so fast, but like there are points where I was like, oh yeah, that's going on too, oh yeah, that's going on too. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of ridiculous.
This movie is trying to do a lot, and in a way I really really admire it for that because it is amazing that this movie is not just a mess, which at some points it gets close, but you can still follow everything. Going back to that is like there's a significant portion of this movie, of this action movie, that is dedicated to a love triangle between Peter Parker, Mary Jane Watson, and Harry Osborn. And I'm not talking about like 5 minutes. The movie takes a 30-minute break.
Oh, yeah. It's
develops
very long.
And develops this love story or love triangle story, which I have major beef with because it doesn't make any sense why Mary Jane would not just tell Peter Parker that Harry Osborn was threatening to kill him.
Yes, thank you.
So that's just a big plot hole that bugs me. But
my other thing with that is that I'm a huge disliker of lying plots. Like in the movie, just in case you guys haven't seen it just yesterday like we have, Harry gets Mary Jane to lie to Peter and say she's not in love with him and that she's with Harry. And I just don't like lying plots. I think they're so dumb and can be very easily fixed.
Well, yeah, it goes back to the movie cliche, which is like the misunderstanding between two characters. Whenever there's like one character is lying for a good cause, but he's lying, or he or she is lying to another character, then you got to go through this whole cliche plot we've seen a million times where they get mad at each other. Most of these cliche movies have a random emo dance sequence in the middle. Jazz dance sequence. We should probably talk about that. The elephant in the room, the dance sequence.
I it was very fun to watch. It's very dumb. But the only thing, okay, so like that part is fun. The reason I don't like that scene is just how weird it is.
Yeah.
And how mean Peter gets. Mm-hmm. Like you can kind of show someone going through like some rough, vengeful stuff without just making them a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene, it's a very weird experience to watch, because you go from just like cracking up at like, what is this movie doing, to 10 seconds later, Peter Parker is slapping Mary Jane across the face. And then it's like a very dark moment. And you're like, hold on one second. A second ago, this guy was like sliding across the floor on a chair. And now we're just dealing with like domestic abuse.
Yeah. And that, like, I don't know. Like, that was probably the only part of the movie that I was just like, this is awful.
Yeah. What do you think of Venom?
Okay. This goes into a lot of my theory that I will say at the end of the podcast after we discuss the action. But I will say that I really like the idea of Venom, and I had to do a little research about like the Venom character, and because in the movie it makes it seem like, I don't know, the way they do it, it doesn't make it seem like Eddie Brock was Venom in like the comic books, which is actually the case. Eddie Brock is Venom in the comic books, but the way they did it, I don't know, it made it seem like they just wanted Topher Grace to become the villain somehow.
I was just thinking about probably actually even more than the crane out of control line is Venom. So Venom is Eddie Brock is in the movie from pretty much the beginning, although he's not in it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But Venom is introduced an hour and 42 minutes in is when Eddie Brock actually becomes Venom. And of course, he is sitting in a church and he utters actually probably, if not the funniest, at least the second funniest line of the movie, which is, he's praying and he says he's praying to God and says, I want you to kill Peter Parker. Oh, that gets a big laugh from me every time. And then of course, Peter Parker is in that church at the exact moment, like taking off his black suit, which, yeah, I think Venom, it was kind of a missed opportunity.
Because it's a very, very cool idea. The thought of something that corrupts you, but makes you more powerful. And I think that it's actually handled pretty well on the end of like the Spider-Man dark suit and stuff like that. But when it infects Eddie Brock, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think that reveals, I mean, going back, we're talking about bad things, but I think there is a common theme throughout the three villains, which is that they're all sort of like reluctant villains. And you have Sandman, who's basically driven by the love he has for his daughter. He's just trying to steal money because she's sick. You have Eddie Brock, who is just basically, you know, tempted by power. He's not really a bad guy. It's really the suit. And then you have Harry Osborn, who is trying to avenge the death of his father, but is really not a bad person. And he, you know, turns good in the end. So, I mean, there is that for the movie that they do. All three villains are sort of have a similar theme to them.
Yeah, but like most comic book villains are reluctant villains.
That's true.
It's
yeah. Now I'm thinking about every other comic book villain, with the exception of like Thanos.
The last con that I really want to mention, and this goes back to Sandman, in the movie we find out that if you remember from the first Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man chases down the man who killed Uncle Ben,
right,
and basically kills him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Pushes him out of a window.
Well, in Spider-Man 3, we find that it is not that guy who killed Uncle Ben, but wait for it, the Sandman himself before he went to prison. And the reason he's in prison is he killing Uncle Ben. And I understand that it works like with the timeline, but I just don't buy it at all.
Yeah. It's a really forced plot. I know you and I have had conversations about just trying to base a movie on the backstory and make cool connections. It's, I don't know, I call it like the, I don't know, like the Scream 3 thing. I don't know if you've ever seen Scream 3.
I have not.
By the time you get to Scream 3, you're kind of out of villains to tie into the backstory of the previous movies, because you kind of know if anyone is the killer or not. When you run out of, you run out of characters to make villains, so you got to invent a backstory to fit a new character, and that's sort of what they do with Sandman. Happened in Spectre as well.
Which
is a movie we might talk about on here eventually, but it happens all the time where you got like, this person's actually their father. I mean, you could call it the Darth Vader thing, but I mean, that's actually a good movie, so I'm not
that makes sense.
It's also not forced. Yeah.
It doesn't go against anything.
Yeah. But, yeah, the Sandman backstory is kind of lame, which is too bad. But, I mean, that's really all I got for cons. The movie can get pretty stupid. The villains are a little convoluted. You know, the dance sequence is pretty rough. Love triangle's pointless.
But, yeah, let's get into the meat of it, the climax of the podcast.
Wow, I am excited to talk about the action in this movie. All 7.5 minutes. That's it. Here's the thing. Spider-Man 3 does not have a lot of action in it.
It doesn't. Well, the thing that... Okay, so it kind of tricks you into thinking that there's a lot of action because unlike a lot of superhero movies, it has a little bit of action throughout. Like a lot of superhero movies are like pretty light on action. Like the first half of the movie, there's like a big event in the middle and then there's a climax at the end.
Yeah.
But in Spider-Man 3, there's like little instances that just kind of pop up, but they are very short and there is not a lot of action.
There's really not. I think the climax is the longest one, which is when Spider-Man fights Venom and the Sandman who have teamed up, and then Harry Osborn flies in and teams up with Spider-Man. I gotta say, I mean, for the most part, I think the action in this movie is pretty good when it's on screen. This goes back to my admiration for Sam Raimi. I think he knows how to shoot an action sequence. You know, he doesn't just point and shoot, but he also doesn't do shaky cam. You know, the camera's moving. I really like the first sequence when Harry fights Peter Parker. Little bit of backstory on the fight sequence. Peter has just gotten Aunt May's ring that he's going to propose to MJ with.
Yep.
And he has this ring and he's attacked by Harry. And throughout the sequence, he keeps dropping the ring and trying to catch it. And man, you really feel for the guy. I like that. I like that they introduce stakes to the action and it's not just, you know, two guys swinging at each other, that there's you actually are invested in like, oh, Peter can't lose that ring. It's Aunt May's ring. We've already said Aunt May is like the most lovable old lady ever.
Don't want to lose a ring.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the stakes of that action sequence, but one of the big things for me, which was a con for action, was that there are no practical effects in this movie.
Yeah, there's not.
And I'm a big fan of practical effects just to make me like suspend my disbelief. Like I know I'm watching a Spider-Man movie, but I would appreciate it if like they would find more ways to actually like use the actors and not a bunch of CGI. That's not even that great of CGI.
Yeah, that's a problem, and it is interesting. This is not a director who's known for his CGI use. He's actually developed a very strong use of practical effects that is awesome in his earlier movies.
Yeah.
But since then, he's kind of gotten away from it. And like if you watch the first Spider-Man movie, man, those effects are bad at some points. It looks real. It looks like a video game, and this movie definitely suffers from that. So, yeah, that is kind of disappointing.
But the visual effects with the Sandman are actually pretty cool.
Yeah, the sand effects are really good.
Which goes into my theory that I will relinquish to everyone at the end of the podcast.
Well, that's the end of the podcast, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Just saying this to force Max to give me his theory.
No, that's not the end of the podcast. We have more action to talk about.
I'll say a couple more things. That way we can actually get to the end of the action sequence. I really do enjoy all the Sandman attacks. I especially like the one down in the sewers. I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, those are cool.
Sorry, I'm drinking Sprite. Just had to burp a little bit.
Will, you just threw up on yourself.
Yeah, I did. I like the fight down in the sewers. I like how, you know, water is his weakness. They really explore some pretty cool things with the Sandman.
Oh, yeah.
If you blow him up, he just turns into glass, which I think that's really cool. I mean, these are all ideas from the comics. I know that they didn't come up with this, but it's fun. And so you have a villain who's made out of sand. What creative ways can we use that? And I like that. They treat that character very, very well. The other ones, it's just punching each other.
Oh, yeah. My other big pros for action. I like how it's pretty consistent, like I said, throughout the movie. Kind of keeps you invested. Also, there's a lot of silence during the action, which is a motif that I really like. Because there's a lot of oh crap moments where like there's no music, you just hear sound effects and stuff like that. And I think that Sam Raimi uses them very, very well. Going back to the fact that he is a very good director.
There's a scene in the crane out of control sequence that I think is pretty legitimately. I can't believe I'm talking about this
crane out of control.
There's a scene. I mean, it's a shot that's legitimately scary. It's Gwen Stacy, who we didn't even talk about. Yeah, Gwen Stacy's in this movie. Yeah. It's Bryce Dallas Howard. Very, very small role. She's in at the top of a building, and the crane is swinging this big, like, I-beam, and it's in the background, and we can see it, but none of the characters can see it, and you know it's going to take out the window, and it is, like, I was on the edge of my seat because you're like, oh, man.
That
and
is a really cool shot.
And it's in it once again, it's silent. There's no music playing. None of the characters are talking. You just see this thing in the background, and it's very, very effective.
Yeah, that's all I pretty much had to say about the action.
Yep.
I want to mention this about the landlord. Yes. Spider-Man's landlord is actually like a really cool character. I don't remember his name.
What's his name?
It's very Russian.
Yeah. I'm going to butcher it and say something offensive. Well, in a way,
it's kind of an offensive character.
It is, yeah. He's a stereotype.
But he's very fun and a very real person. And when I was in... when it was 2007, I was what grade was I in 2007?
Seventh, maybe.
I was in sixth or seventh grade, and I just thought that the landlord's daughter was the cutest girl of all time. I think I watched that movie a couple of times in theaters just because of her. I thought she was so cute. But that's our kind of trivial character mention of the podcast.
Wow. Mary Jane Watson? No. Gwen Stacy? No. I want the landlord's daughter.
She has no name in the movie, too. Or she might have a name. I can't remember.
I can't remember. She's a very minor character.
She is so minor. She's in like a minute of the movie. all right. So that kind of wraps it up a little bit.
I don't have anything else to say. I would love to hear the big theory.
For a theory. Okay, this is just a kind of a dumb theory that I just kind of thought of while I was watching it because I was so impressed by the Sandman parts of the movie and so just kind of like put off by a lot of the Venom stuff. So my theory is that when they were developing Spider-Man 3, the screenwriters, when they were writing it, they had the original the original story of Spider-Man against Venom and Eddie Brock, but they weren't really into it. They kind of reluctantly went away, and they didn't really find any cool stuff. So they went along, and then eventually someone was like, hey guys, what if we like... Have you guys ever heard of the Sandman? And they thought of like a badass story for like the Sandman and stuff like that and some really cool action sequences. And they were so pumped about that. They wedged him into the movie. And then as a result of that, they put all their energy into it, like even in production. So they cast Thomas Hayden Church, a very established actor, as Sandman. And then just like completely neglected Venom and cast Topher Grace. And then like even in like the CGI effect shots, you can tell that they put more effort into the Sandman than Venom. So that's my theory, that they just weren't hot on the Venom thing and just dove right into the Sandman.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that makes sense because you take Venom out of that movie, and I think if you take the Venom subplot out of that movie, and I think the movie is a very, very good superhero movie. If it was just the Sandman, I think everything he's in are the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, that's I completely agree.
Both action-wise, like villain-wise, plot-wise, Sandman's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, it looks like we're kind of running out of time, so we do need to get to some ratings and some recs.
That's true. I'll go first. I'll give let's both give our movie ratings, and then we'll both give our action movie ratings.
All right. So as a film, I gave Spider-Man 3 2 stars, and kind of in my head, 2 stars is like a just below an average movie, because while I did have fun watching it, there are just some things that just make it a very bad movie. And while I did enjoy watching it, I cannot say that it is a good film.
So just to clarify, these are out of 4 stars.
Yep.
Like just like the man, Roger Ebert, personal hero of mine. I gave the movie 3 stars. I like this movie. I think it is genuinely fun throughout. There's never a moment you're bored. And that goes a long way for me in terms of just a movie. I think, Sam Raimi had, just trying to make the funnest movie he can, or just keep his audience as invested as possible, whether it's through like just going extremely over the top or by actually investing in making a good parts of the movie really, really good. But regardless, I think the movie is super fun throughout. So I give it 3 out of 4. It's certainly not a great movie, and I don't know if I'd ever watch it alone, but watching it with people is pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. Me and Will watched it together. We had a lot of fun.
It's very true.
Do you want to give it your action movie ranking or rating?
I will. My action movie ranking is actually lower than my normal movie ranking, because like we said, there's not a lot of action in this movie. So I'm going to give it like a 5 out of... Well, I'll give it a 5 out of 10 J.K. Simmonses. 5 out of 10 Academy Awards that J.K. Simmons has won. That is my ranking. That made no sense.
What, your rating system?
Yeah, it's a 5 out of 10. I give it a 5 out of 10, just because the action's pretty good, but the CGI is not great, and there's just not a lot of it. So I think the movie is more enjoyable during its non-action sequences than the action sequences.
So. I can see that. So for Max's rating, I gave it 6.8 car chases. I'm surprised I gave it higher than Will, but I do understand the point that it really isn't kind of an action movie.
Yeah.
But I basically gave it that just for how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Like, I think I made the joke after we watched it that we didn't actually check the IMDb categories before we watched, just assuming that it was an action movie, but you could call this movie a comedy,
a comedy of errors.
Yeah, you could call it a comedy, a musical, or
you could call it a
musical. You call it a romance movie. There's more romance in this movie than action. So you could even call it a drama, honestly.
A family drama, crime drama.
Yeah. Wow. Looks like we have effectively reviewed Spider-Man 3.
Wow, I didn't think we could do it.
One down, 999 more to go. I will give my recommendation first. Since I like the movie, I'm going to give you a little rec based on if you also like Spider-Man 3, or it sounds like something that's interesting to you, what other movie should you check out? I think you should check out, I believe it's from 1993, Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness.
Oh, yeah. That's a great movie.
Same director, and while Spider-Man 3 goes too far over the top many, many times, Army of Darkness is a perfect movie that just toes the line between, you know, a good bad movie and a genuinely great movie. It's Bruce Campbell in probably his finest role ever. It's, you know, if you don't know, this is the third movie in the Evil Dead series. You don't really have to see the first two if you want to see this one. They're also very, very good, but I'm going to recommend Army of Darkness. It's funny. There's lots of good practical effect action in it. It's got stop motion skeletons, which have always been really cool. And it's got some of the most memorable lines of all time.
Hail to the king, baby.
Yep. Baby, you got real ugly. Army of Darkness, that's my recommendation. That's one of my favorite movies, and I'll just throw that out there.
Cool. So for my recommendation, since I was kind of more on the negative side, particularly as a film, I'm going to give you something that you should do instead of watching Spider-Man 3. Actually, you should watch it, but here's something you could also do. I just started reading The Fellowship of the Ring, and it is a very, very good book. I have never read any of the Lord of the Rings series, nor seen the movies.
Wow, good for an action book, huh?
Good for an adventure book.
That's true. I don't even know if the Lord of the Rings are considered.
I checked
movies.
The IMDb page. They are not. So wow. We cannot review
the
Lord
Hobbit
of the Rings.
Probably is, but ooh, I have a lot to say about The Hobbit.
Wow. Good for a podcast, Hobbit.
Cool.
Well,
talk more about Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah. Do I want to talk more about? No, it's just really good so far. Yeah. And I think that kind of winds it up for us today. We want to thank everyone for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much for tuning in to our first inaugural episode
of Good for an Action Movie. Woo!
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
It's over.
Nothing is over.
Nothing is over until we decide it is.
It's over. Go home.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Oh, I also, I just want to keep talking. Also, I think there's a very captivating performance from the woman who plays the Sandman's wife. She's in the scene. She's in the movie for literally 2 minutes. But man, is she believable.
She is very good. And the daughter's actually really good as
well. Yeah, like every little role in this movie, like the side characters are so much better than the main character.
No, that's very, very true.
We didn't even talk about Tobey Maguire's performance or anything.
Oh God, it's awful. Bernard, the butler. How can we just both do Bernard?
What do you mean, both do Bernard? I am Bernard. I've always been.
I'm Bernard as well. The blade that killed your father was that of his own.
Sir, you have to forgive Spider-Man. It is necessary for the plot of this movie to continue. Spider-Man cannot beat the Sandman and Venom on his own. He needs your help.
Mary Jane is pretty hot.
You guys made that omelet in the kitchen and you didn't clean up your mess.
You also didn't make me an omelet. I bought you the goddamn food.
I haven't eaten in 35 years. I'm wasting away here. It's me, Bernard the butler.